What do you want to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Hello and welcome into a special issue of Meet Me at Mutual. I'm your host, Daniel Choptaw, and I've thought about doing this before as Kyle Reese has joined us a lot of times to talk the minor leagues. And sometimes those conversations, as good as they are, run a little long, and when you add them into Alan and I's already extensive discussion of the Cardinals, we keep you a little longer. We keep you closer to 2 hours, and we don't really want to do that. I recorded with Kyle tonight. This is Thursday night after the Cardinals have lost to Milwaukee that afternoon. We recorded with Kyle, and it turned out to be about a 40-45 minute discussion, and so I thought we'd just go ahead and separate this one out for this week, and we'll see how it goes. Maybe we'll do this on a more regular basis until, like I told Kyle, he starts outdrawing Alan and I, and then we'll put them all back together so Alan and I can feel better. But anyway, Kyle and I, we talk a lot about the promotions, some of the promotions that happened in the system over the last week, and then some about some of the minor leaguers we've seen at the big league level and how they're being used. So sit back and enjoy a special Meet Me and Usual.
0-1 to Pools. In the air, left field, and Pools has given St. Louis the lead. A dramatic, towering three-run home run. Stunned in disbelief here in Houston.
And we're here with Kyle Reese from Redbird Daily. You find him on Twitter, KyleR416. And, Kyle, we can find you on your own podcast with Colin Gardner, Prospect to Be Named Later. Talk a little bit about your new show and what y'all are trying to do there.
Yeah, so we had our pilot episode. We recorded it last Saturday night and put it out for publishing on Sunday. And it's just going to be me and Colin. And as I kind of outlined in our mission statement that we introduced in the pilot episode, my vision of it is I want to inform in a way that you otherwise might not get information on prospects. I feel like locally the only time you ever hear about a prospect is in a really positive manner, and we're by no means are we going to take away the positives that the kids do. It's not going to be us bashing them, but we want to give you a fully fleshed out idea of what these kids are doing. We want to give you a better idea of from a scouting standpoint, of what they're capable of, what they're doing well. And we want, like I said in the podcast in that first episode, my goal is when you talk to your friends or talk to your family, if you decide to talk to your family about this stuff, I want to give you a chance to have information that you're not going to find in a stat sheet or in STL Today, St. Louis Post-Dispatch article, or at another blog maybe. I want to give you the information that it almost sounds like you're in the room with the scouts talking a little bit about. And without getting too nerdy about it, without getting in too much detail that it's boring. Because I think that's an easy thing that we fall into while writing about baseball. Not to get too far off the subject, but I feel like that's one of the disconnects with advanced metrics with your average baseball watcher. It's just not interesting when you take it to that next level. It's nice to know it's there, but I think some people are turned off by that, and I think it's the same way with prospects. So our goal is to try to keep it as straightforward but also as extra informative as possible. And Colin's come a long way. He's had a chance to really sit in and watch Springfield and talk to scouts and talk to managers and players. And He's really impressive. He's a really smart kid who's starting to really get a feel for how development at the minor league levels work.
Yeah, I listened to the first episode on Sunday. I was mowing the grass and stuff, and really enjoyed it. It is difficult sometimes to get that prospect information and trying to gather that in so many different places. But y'all did a great job breaking down a lot of what we're seeing. You know, some of the names that we know, but some of the names we don't. I'm looking forward to hearing some more. Like I said, Colin says in the show that he's been only doing this for some weeks, really, and I was very surprised because he sounded like he'd been following the minors for a long period of time, and so it was some good stuff. So I will say, if you can only listen to one podcast, listen to one of mine. But if you can listen to a few.
Yeah,
you can add it to your mix. Yeah, you know, it was really, and y'all keep it. I assume about an hour or so. The first one was. I assume that's about what you're gonna try for.
We're gonna try to keep it in the 45-minute to an hour range. Try to keep it tight. I'll also say that if you're gonna listen to a podcast, make sure to listen to Meet Me Unusual too. I the less you have of me, the better, for real.
Anyway, it is good, and you can find it on iTunes. Find it across the other places too. So, and we'll add a link or something to the show notes here. But let's then talk a little bit about those prospects. We hoped when we kind of talked last week on the show that we would have some new names to talk about, or some new names that are no longer with us, but the Cardinals don't do anything at the trade deadline, so we're kind of stuck with the same people. But we did see some people make some changes, move up in the system. Let's talk about some of those guys.
Yeah, you know, with the first off, I've been really impressed with how Luke Weaver's pitched at the major league level. I think that Colin and I talked about it a little bit, but he lit up the big grand slam to JD Martinez in his debut. And I think that kind of skews exactly how good he was. He fatigued out late in the game. But then yesterday against Milwaukee, I thought he looked great. You know, his line gets skewed a little bit because he got marched out there for the seventh inning when he probably shouldn't have, and an extra run and an extra walk got tacked on. You know, his pitch count was up in the low 90s, and he probably shouldn't have gone out there for the seventh, but they had a lead and it made sense. I get that. But because of Weaver moving up, it's allowed everyone else to move up a level. So Dakota Hudson, who a lot of people, a lot of people are really high on, he's in our top 10 at the Redbird Daily. He made his Memphis debut. He pitched seven innings, let up six hits, four earned runs, three walks, four strikeouts. That's right in line with what you want. Remember with Dakota Hudson, he's a year removed from college. He was getting a ton of ground ball outs at Springfield. He wasn't striking out people. So the walks are a little high, but it's also to be expected in your debut. He also only threw 91 pitches through seven innings. So that should go to show you how effective and efficient he is, right? That's really impressive. When you add in that he walked three guys and still only threw 91 pitches in seven innings, that should give you an idea of just how dominant he can be at times, how overwhelming he can be. He throws a slider that's, everyone's heard at this point, is one of the best in the organization, if not one of the best in the minors. He's mixing in his fastball and his changeup. And I've also heard that he's throwing something similar to a sinker. Colin mentioned that. That can get up into the low to mid 90s. So he has a legitimate chance, in my opinion, to be a really, really middle to front of the end rotation starter as he starts to understand how to strike guys out, because his stuff is good enough to strike people out. And even if he never strikes out people, he gets enough grounders that he's going to be efficient and effective at the major league level. So that's a really cool thing to see. Go on.
No, I do want to ask. I mean, I know he's a guy, and I can't remember if you said, I think one of you, if it wasn't you, maybe Colin, that was a little bit hesitant about him being that guy out of the bullpen. But there's been a lot of talk about him being somebody that can come up and at least for this year, you know, plug a hole, or, you know, either now or when the rosters expand. I mean, is that where it looks like he's going, at least for the short term?
Yeah, you know, I could see him. And, of course, it all matters what the 40-man looks like. Mm-hmm. They're at 39 men now. I would think that in the pecking order of prospects, that Jack Flaherty would get the first look before Dakota Hudson would. I get the idea that Hudson is he's he has a better fit for the bullpen. He's done it before. He knows how to pitch out of those situations. He's done it in college. He did it last year after being drafted. He closed out a couple games in Springfield during the playoffs last year. But he might be able to. So I have a theory about this, getting into the major league level. So the Cardinals are in an unusual situation where their bullpen is kind of trashy, right? Like, we know that. And if they're serious about winning, now's the time to call up Luke Weaver and keep him in the bullpen. Now's the time to put Dakota Hudson in the bullpen. Now's the time to have Jack Flaherty pitching in the bullpen. That's their only chance at winning a division. It's the only chance at storming the second half. They're not going to do it while they're rolling the dice in the bullpen. They need to see if any of these guys can contribute. And I believe personally that that's – if they're serious about winning, that's the next step they're going to take. Like, Luke Weaver doesn't go down over the weekend when Waino's ready to pitch. They figure out what to do with one of those four lefties. But I think Hudson's capable. If he were to pitch in the major leagues right now, he wouldn't embarrass himself. I think Flaherty's more suited for that. I think that if you needed an arm, you'd go Flaherty first. But Hudson's good, and he's poised and in control. And just like Flaherty, the two of those guys, what they have is poise. They never seem rattled, and they control a strike zone, and they control a start. So they're interesting guys for sure.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, the bullpen's a different story because it would have been one of those things that you think they would have, you know, created some holes maybe at the trade deadline. Because now, you're talking about waiving some people. It's a bullpen that doesn't necessarily have a lot of flexibility in it as much as it used to. But it will be interesting to see what they do there. Okay, so then he moves up. So who takes his spot at Double A?
Yeah, Double A. That meant that Ryan Helsley, who is one of my favorites in the minor league system, a hard throwing righty, backfilled and made his Double A debut on Tuesday. His was a little bit more rocky. He pitched four innings, let up five hits, only one earned run, but he walked four and struck out six. I was watching that game, and what I took away from that is he was overthrowing low, which is good. I'd rather have him overthrow low than overthrow high. He was still hesitant to throw. He has a curveball and a changeup. He was throwing his changeup more, but he was hesitant to throw his curve. And when he threw his curve, he was getting guys, but he just wasn't trusting it. He wasn't throwing it enough. So he labored, I think, in three. You know, he pitched four innings. In three different innings, he got two quick outs and then walked a guy and let up a hit, flirted with disaster, and then got out of it. So, you know, I'm really anxious to see how his second start goes. I think that'll tell us a lot more. The other thing about that start for Helsley is he's an Oklahoma native, and the start was in Tulsa. He had his entire family apparently at the game, and they never showed it on the broadcast, but they talked about it. But at the game, there was like one entire section that was full, and, you know, just like with most minor league games, every other section was kind of spot-filled. And those were all of Helsley's people, which is like the coolest thing on earth. But you know, that's a lot of emotion there that you're dealing with, and I would imagine that's the first time he's had an opportunity to pitch in front of his family in quite some time. Pitching in Palm Beach, you know, when your family's from Oklahoma, you're probably not getting many visitors. So I believe his next start will be in Springfield, and I think that'll be a little bit more telling of what kind of a pitcher. Or what kind of the rest of a season he's going to have at that level. The other thing that's really interesting about Helsley is he is at the point now where he's going to surpass his innings total in any other minor league season. Last year, he had pitched 97-plus innings, and this year he's right at 94 innings. I think he's just a shade underneath 94. So he's never pitched this deep, and we're going to get a better idea of how he's going to fatigue out. And that's really interesting to me. So August is a really important month for Ryan Helsley to see what kind of stamina he has and how he's willing to make adjustments at the most difficult league that isn't Memphis in the minors.
Yeah, that makes it interesting. I would think for your purposes and for the club's purposes, it makes it difficult a little bit to evaluate him because you're putting him in at a new level at the time where he's going to start maybe fatiguing anyway. You know, how much is it him facing new batters? How much is it he was just going to struggle anyway? I think that would be interesting to see.
Yeah, it's going to be, like I said, August is going to be really interesting. They worked some rest into his last 2 weeks at Palm Beach. He came in of relief of Jake Woodford when Woodford made his first start, when Woodford came off the DL. He made a four-inning appearance out of relief, but that was the only time he had pitched in 14 days. So that's the other thing to keep in mind here is this start came 14 days after his last start. So again, it was a hard one to evaluate, but I think we'll get a better feel moving forward.
Yeah, because you were saying on the podcast, if I remember, that he really needed to move up. He had done everything he could do at the lower levels.
Yeah, he was striking out a guy an inning. He was walking a guy every third inning. He had only let up 3 home runs all year in 93 innings or something. He dominated that level. And the problem with dominating that level is you can get lazy dominating that level. And he wasn't doing that. That's not what I'm saying. But when you have a fastball that's as electric as his is, people at the A advanced level don't see that very often. A lot of times I think about Sandy Alcantara. Like Alcantara had 6 starts at Palm Beach between Peoria and Springfield. He ended last year at Palm Beach. And a lot of times guys of that caliber, they'll just skip Palm Beach. They'll go right from A to double A. And it's the same with the hitters, of course. It's more frequent with the hitters than it is with the pitchers. But, you know, a lot of times if you have one dominant pitch and if that pitch is a fastball that you can get away with throwing high or low in any count, it'll skew some of your results and maybe make your other pitches lazy. So I don't believe that's what Helsley was doing, but I think we're about ready to find out as we go down the stretch here in Springfield.
All right. Well, then obviously that created another hole there. So how did that hole get filled?
Now, that hole is still kind of being determined to a degree, but at the mid part of July, Jordan Hicks was promoted to Palm Beach. And Jordan Hicks, who, again, I believe when Baseball America redid their top 10 rankings, he was prospect number 10 on the list, or he was in the top 10. You know, he's a surger. He has a potential 70-grade curveball to go with a fastball that can tick up in the high 90s, and a changeup that's showing signs of being average. That's a lot of people think is average right now, but is showing signs of being above average. He's made 5 starts, including tonight in Palm Beach, and he has only let up 3 earned runs over those 5 starts, and all 3 of those runs came in his first start. He's really, really coming into his own. He struck out 24 guys in 17 innings, only walked 4. Again, those 3 earned runs. He's really, really interesting. They have him on a really strict pitch count right now. He isn't throwing any more than 60 pitches, which when you think about it is really awesome, because at first you see, oh, he's gone 5 innings in 4 of his 5 starts. He hasn't gone more than 5 innings in any of his starts. But then you look back and you see, oh, wait, this kid is only throwing 60 pitches to get through 5 innings in nearly all of those starts. And you think, all right, maybe this kid really is hitting it. I got a chance to watch a little bit of his start on the 28th last Friday, and he's impressive. He's impressive. You know, I want to see more of him, and you know, he's just a really, really impressive kid, a kid worth getting excited about. You know, he's kind of on where Alcantara was this time last year. He's probably only going to get a couple more starts at Palm Beach. I would imagine that they'll stretch him out. Like, I wouldn't doubt that by the end of the season, he's back up to the 100 pitch count mark. But he'll be in Springfield next year to start the year, and he's an important prospect because he's kind of a middle prospect. They have guys on the way, way back in Alvaro Cejas and Johan Oviedo, and then they've got the guys right on the cusp: the Flahertys, the Hudson, Gomber. You know, even Helsley to a degree. Like, he's kind of a pocket prospect that's going to be really important for the depth of this the Major League team moving forward. So if you aren't already keeping an eye on Jordan Hicks, it's definitely time to do it right now.
Well, and he's been one that I have seen Derek Gould especially mention as a guy that has drawn a lot of attention from other organizations as a possible trade chip. I mean, as you say, he kind of fits a hole that the Cardinals have had that donut hole before. They wouldn't necessarily want it again, but Could you see that him being some part of some deal this offseason?
I don't. I really don't. I think they'll hold on to him because of that very reason that I said. I wouldn't, you know, every team that's going to go fishing for a pitching prospect is going to want somebody who's on the cusp of the major leagues. You know, pitching's the currency. So I'm sure that teams will go fishing for him, but I think they're more likely to deal Hudson, anybody but Flaherty and Reyes, really, than they would be Hicks.
Makes sense. Well, let's talk about some of these. Now that we've kind of hit some of those people that have moved up in the organization, let's talk about somebody that actually just moved down. We saw Harrison Bader make his debut, get added to the 40-man, and then he didn't stay up as long as I expected. I think the idea, at least in my mind, you can correct me if I'm wrong, was that once Harrison Bader came up, he was going to be up. That's kind of the reason we haven't seen him all year. We saw Magnarius Sierra instead, and yet, because of Stephen Piscotty's, return from the DL, Bader gets, 7-10 days up in the big leagues. What did you see out of him? What does he need to work on while he's back down in Memphis?
So the one thing that stands out more than anything, even than his failures, is just how much of a hustler he is. You know, the one thing that you and I talked about, or that I've talked about regularly, is there isn't a guy who's going to work harder than he is, and it's such a cliche, especially for somebody of his stature and build and maybe ethnicity. But he really is. He's the hardest worker on the diamond, and we saw that. He's done everything he can to get himself to the major league level. You can't say that about everyone. A lot of people just run on talent alone and get there. He's not one of those guys. I was really impressed at first with how he was taking at bats. So the thing about Harrison Bader and taking at bats, and pardon me, we saw this a little bit in spring training, is if he doesn't get a pitch early in a count, like on the first two pitches, if he doesn't make contact, he gets out and usually strikes out. And I want to say that almost 80% of his at bats that ended in a strikeout in spring training were on three pitches. I wrote about it, which is English as opposed to what I just said. I wrote about it in spring training. But that goes to show you how dangerous he is as a hitter, or how dangerous it is to have him as a hitter in your lineup. And at first it seemed like he was doing a decent job of working some counts, getting a little deeper, shortening his swing to make contact. But what ended up happening as it progressed, as his short six-game stint progressed, people started throwing him low in the zone, breaking pitches early. He was swinging and missing, and then doing exactly what he does in those situations, get over-aggressive and try to hit everything so he doesn't strike out, and then he would end up striking out. He also does this thing, and he had all but eliminated it at Memphis, and he started doing it towards the end of his little taste of the major leagues, where when he swings, you can actually see his body dip. And, you know, the thing I always teach the little leaguers that I coach is you want to keep your body – you don't want to keep your body as still as possible, but you want to keep that head as still as possible. And if your eye level's changing, that changes the plane of the baseball. And that goes for 12-year-old kids as it does for 23-year-old kids. And he started doing that again. And, you know, maybe what it is more than anything is he overextends, he overextends his front leg when he swings. It might just be that, trying to get a little too much leverage, a little too much power, maybe fooled on breaking pitches, and he's got bad timing because of it. But he does this little dip, and in my mind, whenever I see that, that tells me that he's off. Especially because every game I saw him in Memphis, even on pitches low in the zone, even breaking pitches low in the zone, he was not doing that. So that the one thing I would like to see, and I'm sure I believe it's Mark Budaska, the hitting coach for Memphis, will work out with him. Hopefully is a little bit of that. But if he can just have that approach that he had in those first couple games, working it into a hitter's count, getting the pitch that he wants, you know, I think those will be the big ones for him. You know, Harrison Bader as a center fielder is exactly what you saw. He's going to catch nearly everything hit at him. If he goes back on a ball, he's not going to get in the right position to make a throw. If he comes in on a ball, he'll probably be fine. But he's an average major league center fielder that you don't really have to worry about, but you don't you shouldn't expect spectacular things from. And he, I'd like to see him. I'd like to see him work on his approach at the plate and get that little swing thing ironed out.
Well, it would be nice. You're right. It didn't seem like he was, especially. You're right. Chasing stuff low, and it did not take major league pitchers too long to figure him out. We've seen a couple of other minor leaguers that are still up. We've seen Luke Voit. We've seen Paul DeJong, and have had different experiences. It feels like Luke Voit, you can argue because he doesn't get a chance to play very much, and that's a different argument, but seems to have, it definitely isn't what he used to, what he was when he first came up. And Paul DeJong seems to have had a longer stretch of good, but he seems to be hitting a little bit of a wall as well. Is that accurate?
You know, I'll start definitely with DeJong. There's a lot of things to keep in mind with Paul DeJong, and he definitely just looked gassed to me. His swing was still strong, but it looked slow. He's played a lot of baseball, and there's a couple of people who would tell you that with guys like Grichuk and Bader and DeJong, you just don't throw them strikes. And that's not entirely false, but I personally believe that DeJong can handle the stuff outside a little bit better than most. What I'm seeing from him is total fatigue. Again, there's the things that I say you have to keep in mind. Try to keep in mind that this Paul DeJong is a kid who is still new to shortstop. It gets lost a little bit. You know, he'll make an error, and you can tell he's working extra hard to not make that error again. I just think he's working too hard right now, and it's his first real major league slump, and I think he's trying to fight through it extra hard. He got the day off today. I'm glad he didn't pinch hit. I think that would have been a disaster. I know that there was a situation where it would have been better for him up there, but it would have been better for the Paul DeJong we saw last week than the Paul DeJong we saw yesterday. So I'm glad he didn't come in. I'd actually like to see him get one more day of rest. This is a smart kid. And I'm not to bag on Bader, because Bader's a hard worker, and Randall Grichuk is you can tell he's a really hard worker too. But he's a smart kid on a different level. You don't get as good at short as he's gotten in 6 months by not having the athleticism to adjust and learn on the fly. He played second base, and no one knew that he hadn't played second base since college when he did it here at the major league level. And then he barely plays shortstop in his first taste of the majors, and then gets sent down to Memphis, gets to play for a couple days, and gets brought back up to play shortstop at the major league level. Makes a couple errors early, but you know he's done some pretty amazing things since getting a chance to see the pace of play in Major League Baseball, to see the speed of baseball at the major league level. So I think personally, it's a total fatigue issue with Paul DeJong, in that with the right amount of rest. And mental rest in particular, he'll be fine. Luke Voit is a little different, and for the very reason that you said. He was really good to start. You know, when he was getting 4, 5, 3 at-bats a game, you know, he was hitting pretty well. It wasn't spectacular. It was, you know, hitting – actually, it was pretty spectacular. I'm gonna cheat. I'm going to go to Baseball Reference here. And in his first 16 games, he had – 2, 3, 5 pinch hits, but he was also in the other 11 games he was a starter, and he hit .302 with an on-base percentage of .348 and an OPS of .976. And then since then, he's hardly had a chance to start. Over the last 13 games he's played, he's only started 6 games. So it's hard to get a feel for how he's doing. And If you look, like on Tuesday when he got to play, or wait, no, Wednesday when he got to play, he went 2-for-4 again with an RBI and a strikeout. You know, personally, I think with him, and I'm a homer for him because I'm a fan of his, I just think he needs to play every day. And that'll give us a better indication, because right now we're not getting – there's no way of telling how good or how bad he is, if he's capable of making the adjustments or if he's not capable. It's a similar situation with Carson Kelly right now. And it just – I don't want to say it's not fair to the kids, because they're collecting a paycheck and they're staying in their own hotel room and they're taking flights instead of buses, and I'm sure that they'd rather be on the bench struggling than down in Memphis being successful in some cases. But personally, I think, and maybe from a homer viewpoint, but I think that the issue is that he just isn't playing enough.
There was some talk on Twitter today that, and I think it was Voight, that they ought to be sent down. Of course, then that flips, you know, who do you bring up? There's some talk about Patrick Wisdom maybe being the guy. It feels like anybody, though, that they're going to dip into Memphis needs to have some regular playing time here. I mean, there's not any grizzled veterans or guys that are far enough along in their careers to just be a pinch hitter, but it doesn't seem like they're going to have that playing time in the big leagues.
Yeah, you know, that's the interesting thing. Patrick Wisdom, so the two guys that might be interesting in Memphis are Patrick Wisdom and Breivik Valera. And when I say interesting, I don't mean interesting in a successful way in the major league level, because even if they come up and they're successful right away, people are going to get really excited about them, and then they're going to hate them by this time next year. I like the idea of bringing Patrick Wisdom up and using him as so he's a really solid third baseman. Like he might even be a step up from what we've seen out of Jed Jerko this year. Maybe a little bit. Maybe he's on level with what we've seen out of Jed Jerko this year as compared to what Jerko was in the past. But he can play a little first. He hasn't done it a lot. He's done it a little bit. And I personally don't – like, he's not going to get better with more at-bats. You know, like you asked me with Luke Voit, is Luke Voit going to get better with more at-bats? I personally believe so. There's nothing that's shown otherwise. With Patrick Wisdom, he's had up and downs at the major league level. He still isn't hitting the ball. He still isn't making enough contact at the minor league level. If you're going to bring him up, he's suited for the role that Luke Voit has right now. You know, if you're picking the worst of the two, right now the situation for Voit is worse than it would be for Wisdom. So I'm on board with that, believe it or not. I like it. And then Breivik Valera is whatever. He's a contact, soft-hitting, solid player that is probably worse than Greg Garcia, and that's not something that the Cardinals need right now. So, I'd be in favor of that. But, again, you have to understand that, just like you said, it's pointless to bring these guys up if they need everyday at-bats because they're not going to get them.
Well, and you and I have talked about Wisdom, I think, in the past, or at least on Twitter. And I think if people look at his minor league numbers, especially this year, they may expect him to be that big bat off the bench or a guy that can really, you know, spark a team. And I don't know. I don't feel like I'm that sold on that. I mean, yeah, he could hit one every once in a while, but I have a feeling that feels to me like he'd be exposed very quickly.
Yeah, he would be. He's a high strikeout guy, you know? And that's never going to change. His first taste of Springfield, he was really bad. His average dipped below 200, and they sent him down to extended spring training for an extended period of time to work on his contact tool. And this was like three years ago now at this point. And he came back, and he was on fire for the last – for a month, and then tapered off at the end of that. And he's always going to strike out, and he's not going to strike out like Grichik strikes out. He's not going to strike out like DeJong strikes out. It's going to be even more intense than that. And the power isn't going to be the upside that DeJong has or Grichik has. I guess the short of the long is I would not mind him in that role, and I would rather have him in that role than Voit, but he's not the answer. He's just a really nice bench piece to have, and he should only be that or only be considered that if it happens.
Basically, he's worth less, so put him there because Voit has, you know, you're damaging Voit's value. I think that's what you're getting at. So.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Finally, and I know I left him for the last because I know you said you had some words.
Oh, no.
About Carson Kelly and how he's been used. And we have, obviously we're not going to get into the whole Yadier Molina, Mike Matheny type of thing, which may or may not be inspired by Carson Kelly's return to the major leagues, but the fact is we have not seen very much of Carson Kelly. And again, as we were talking about with Luke Voit, that gets into development on a guy that, you know, obviously has a much higher ceiling than probably anybody else that's been brought up.
Yeah, it just, to me, it's completely pointless. And like you said, it's speaking of pointless, it's not worth getting into the Yadi Matheny thing. But, you know, you have a 23-year-old kid who is still developing. He's learning this. I mean, he's learning how to catch. He's, you know, for all intents and purposes, gotten pretty dang good at it. But he has 10 at-bats. You know, 11 plate appearances since he's got called up. It's just, it's pointless to have him up here. You and I might have joked about, you know, everyone was really excited about Matheny and Molina working with him before Milwaukee's game, the game against Milwaukee on Thursday afternoon. That's not enough. You know, getting in the cage is not enough. You risk stunting this kid's growth by having him up here and playing one in every, at this point, like what, one in every, starting one of every seven games, one in every eight games. You know, he's appeared in five games, but that's not enough. It's just not going to work. He needs to be catching. He needs to get in there. He needs to get familiar with the pitching. It's a waste to have him up at the major league level if you're only going to start him once every week or once every 10 days, because that's where we're at right now. And, you know, if you want a guy to be the backup to Yadier Molina, who's Eric Fryer, then you should have just kept Eric Fryer. It's frustrating to me as somebody who's watched Carson Kelly over the last couple of years blossom and develop. When he first tasted Springfield last year, you could see that this was a raw kid, and that's part of my admiration for him. That's part of the reason why I like him and I respect him as much as I do. He was not anywhere near where he's at right now, and to see him do that in over, you know, in a little over a year and a half, to get from that kid I saw in those first couple of games at Springfield to the guy I saw at Memphis before being promoted, he's legitimate, and he's only going to be as legitimate as you let him be. And he's not going to be legitimate as a prospect or a player if he's only playing one in every 10 days. It doesn't matter who's instructing him. It could be Johnny Bench. It could be Yogi Berra. It could be the great Yadier Molina and Mike Matheny. And it's not going to do him any good if he isn't getting the reps, the in-game reps. So, you know, they've got to find, they can bring Eric Fryer back if they wanted to. But right now, this is not the role that Carson Kelly should have at the major league level. And not only is it hurting Carson, and maybe it might be hurting the clubhouse too, but it's hurting the future of the St. Louis Cardinals, and that's irresponsible on so many levels. And I hate to rant on and on about it, but I hope that people understand just how serious of a situation it can be with him not getting the reps that he needs at the most, what could be the most important stage of his development. So that, again, I'm sorry about the little rant, but that's my own personal feeling about it. And I can't imagine a kid not getting a chance to play for the last 2.5 months of the 2017 season, and then getting, you know, being expected, and then God only knows what happens next year or the year after, then being expected to take over the reins of whatever he inherits. It's just setting the kid up for failure.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, he came up July 21st, started that night, then it was like another 6 days before he started again, and it's been about 7 days since he's started. Well, I mean, if I'm looking at this right, you know, his last appearance was July 29th, so, you know, we're looking at, you know, 4 days, 5 days since he's even been on the field. And unless he came in today, which I don't know, he didn't, because Yadi took out, the pinch ran for him in the ninth. So, you know, it's just, you're right. I mean, there's no point. I mean, what was the point of getting rid of Eric Fryer? Well, the idea was that Carson Kelly's bat was better than that. And if nothing else, occasionally, I mean, it's not good, but at least let him pinch hit sometimes a little bit more regularly than, you know, because I know it says, oh, you can't use your backup catcher. Well, dadgummit, yeah, you can. I mean, you know, Yachty related didn't hurt. I mean, that's kind of the point. He's not going to come out and let, I mean, Yachty got hit in the head twice today. He didn't come out.
Exactly.
So, it is frustrating. I mean, again, we know where the Cardinal season's at, and I get, I'm sure, this idea that if you run Molina out there, you're trying to put your best lineup out there. You can make that argument or whatever. I mean, obviously, Yachty still has something in him. He hit two home runs last night. But it should be very easy to say Carson Kelly's going to catch Mike Leake, whoever it is, Adam Wainwright. You know, somebody. Pick a pitcher. Let him catch them. Let him get to know those guys, and he'll get in there every fifth day. And then hopefully he can, you know, catch some, you know, some late innings here and there, or, you know, replace another time when Yachty doesn't play, whatever. But you're right. I mean, this is, it is a little bit scary when you think about what's coming up, because this, you would think that the idea of Carson Kelly was broached in these discussions with Yachty with his extension. But if they were, I have a feeling it was, Yachty's fine with some things in idea, in theory. He's not as great with them in practice.
Yeah, I agree. And it almost seems like this has lit a fire underneath him.
Yeah.
You know, this is the best he's played all year, especially behind the plate. You're seeing him use his body to block baseballs instead of swiping at it, which we haven't seen all year.
Maybe that was the idea. Maybe they, but, you know, it's a high price to pay, like you say, if you're going to be starting to hamper Kelly's development just to try to get a little bit more out of Yachty Molina, which might just as well have happened if you moved him to sixth or seventh in the lineup.
You know,
if somebody had the guts to do that. Your awards, get ready to write them up. They'll be up at Redbird Daily Friday or Saturday?
Yeah, tomorrow morning, probably about 9 o'clock, I should have the weekly top performers in the minor leagues for the Cardinals, and look for Jordan Hicks, look for Ronnie Williams, who I'm really excited to write about for the first time positively in a really long time, and it was another weird week in the minor leagues for the Cardinals, so keep an eye out.
That's right, and then you'll record again the second episode of the show this weekend with Colin, so we'll keep an eye out for that. Kyle, appreciate you joining me tonight. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, happy birthday to Luis Robert.
That's right. Mr. Luis Robert, you know, August 3rd, we kind of, the White Sox were kind enough to tweet that out today, and I was kind enough to bring that to Kyle's attention. So Kyle is probably now drinking. I don't know.
Oh, no, I'll send you a picture.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, it's an interesting thing, and I'm sure we will be watching Luis Robert for better or for worse for a number of years, and you know, maybe hopefully the Cardinals dodged a bullet.
Yeah.
We can hope. We don't really count on it, but we can hope. Kyle, we'll talk at you again next week.
All right, thank you, Daniel.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!